Welcome to Orchestrated Relationships, a podcast studying relational value. I'm David Homan, your host. Years ago, I formed a community of people called connectors, people who have an innate ability to build and maintain authentic relationships across their personal and professional lives, and who thrive on making connections. The community was formed out of a need to develop a system and a methodology to help relational value be valued. And the most effective way I've found so far is to champion somebody else, which is why I have in front of me the incredible Katie Hunt Moore. Welcome, Katie.
Thank you.
Now, you're a former journalist, now director of community for Virgin Unite, with roles at Etsy, among others, throughout your career. You founded a charity helping vulnerable children in Tanzania. And when you retire from using corporate social responsibility to save the oceans, you'll be able to enjoy surveying coral reefs as you did years ago with your former biology degree.
Yes, that is the best bio I think I've ever had.
I cobbled together from a couple different websites and hoped I got it accurate enough.
That's great.
So you obviously oversee, especially with the role you have at Virgin, so many incredible verticals and parallels that are helping the world become a better and safer place. But I'd love you to just talk about one of the projects you feel has an incredible impact, and for everyone listening to see how they can help.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think I've chosen a special one for our conversation because it is all about community. The concept that we're calling the Virgin Unite Constellation really focuses on how we can draw people that have all sorts of diverse resources into community with nonprofit and social enterprise leaders. And really at the core is how we can displace traditional giving relationships and actually start problem solving together in a way that brings in far more resources than just a cash donation that a nonprofit might expect, but actually looks at all of the resources that someone might bring to bear on accelerating a nonprofit's work.
So when you think about how that's amplified, give me a sense of how that works.
Yeah. At the heart of it is direct connection between an individual who has some resource to give. Sometimes that is going to be cash donations, but very often it's so much more dynamic than that. So what are their skills, businesses, what are their own connections that they might leverage that might support a nonprofit? And a fantastic example, a real life example, is we have this beautiful community member named Victor Ochen, who is a survivor of the civil conflict in Uganda under Idi Amin. And throughout his childhood, growing up in the refugee camp, decided that peace and the lexicon of peace were the most central to resolving conflict in a more permanent way. And he's since gone on to build the African Youth Empowerment Network. He was the youngest African ever nominated for the Nobel Peace Prize. And he's got a dream around a peace academy. And we were able to bring him into connection with two people, Kimberly and Paul, who own a branding and design firm. And we're able to give him an entire refurbished website. His website didn't accept donations, for example. Critical.
Very important critical for a nonprofit issues. When you want to build a center.
Yeah. So to not only redesign that, but also design his brand and give him assets. So he's able to get into rooms with major banks and the UN and all of these people, but didn't really have the materials needed for them to take the conversation forward within their organizations.
Amazing.
So what they've been able to give him is far beyond what a donation that they might consider would have done for him.
I mean, I totally agree. I mean, I think it's a brilliant concept because the old model of philanthropy is a bunch of people who have means deciding how much they can give and how many people they have to say no to. And for those I know that have incredible consciences but not unlimited means, it often means very simply that they feel so bad saying no, they don't want to be asked. But very rarely are they asked for their value or for their passions, or what they actually want to give or learn about. They're simply thought of as a bank or an institution. So do you find from the other side, given that the Virgin Network has an incredible amount of business leaders and philanthropists, do they come to you with any vulnerability to say where they want to awaken their passions or learn about another area? Are you coming to them and trying to make this a two-way street? How do you facilitate those dialogues to figure out where an ask to somebody is not an imposition, but actually an offering?
Yeah, it is absolutely a two-way street. And I think core at this is so often high net worth individuals, business leaders are given the advice around philanthropy to follow your passion. And what that leads to is a very flat conversation of what are the issue areas you care about most. Fantastic. Here's some suggested organizations where you can send your check. Well, people are passionate about a lot of things. And very often, it's not necessarily a cause area. It's passionate about being tapped in the right way. So we find that for Paul and Kimberly is a fantastic example. They're passionate about building brands. That's what they do for their business. That's what they love. So we can plug that into someone like Victor. We can equally plug it into something like climate change or saving the oceans. So it can be a much more integrated and nuanced conversation when we're talking about how to actually leverage what someone loves doing more than just the cause area that they might want to serve in abstract of having that real emotional connection.
Awesome. And that emotional connection is key.
Yes.
But with that, I've started to understand that there's a large amount of people in this world I can get along with, and an even larger amount that just don't get me and I don't get. So I started to think about this in the context of why, even as somebody who's Jewish, I've never seen the show The Goldbergs, ever. But I've seen the last 20 seconds of it for the entirety of its existence right before Modern Family, which is a show that my wife and I just absolutely love to watch. And so as I talk to people that love Modern Family, it becomes a little bit of a window in terms of whether I'll get along with them or not. But not everyone in the world watches this show or even thinks it's funny. For a while, my wife didn't. We had a little bit of a marital decision of whether to spend time together on a Wednesday night or not, until she finally realized that it was actually really funny, and she just had to give it that moment. But I am somebody who can quote frequently from The Simpsons and South Park and Futurama and Family Guy and Seinfeld and a whole bunch of things, along with Edward Albee and Arthur Miller and William Shakespeare. And those weren't a dichotomy, but they were all of it. But I've started to understand that there are just different types of connectivity in people. And being somebody who can actually match up where somebody's passions and interests and personality will match is the most important way, especially to have impact when you want to form something like this partnership you did. Because it's not simply PR firm and passions and need and somebody with a great goal and a need. You have to actually understand whether the makeup of those people will allow them to come together to find a reciprocal value as opposed to just a give and a take. So that's how I approach now an understanding of relationships. So the first question is, what's your favorite sitcom?
My gosh. So this true story, I haven't actually owned a TV since. I've never owned a TV.
That's fine. I just quoted shows from the 90s.
That's true. It might have to be The Simpsons.
Okay. See, that's why we get along.
Yeah.
I mean, I haven't watched it in 15 years, but now I can binge watch it on Disney Plus. So thank you for that.
There you go. Indelible, really smart, tight cultural reference, and great gags on top of it.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah.
So when you think of this, not in terms of whether the people you introduce like the same sitcom or not, but how do you take an understanding of what you know of different people and approach how they should initially talk for one to give value to the other and the other to be valued, then them both to find value from it?
Absolutely. And it's such a fantastic question, because the concept of pro bono work is obviously not new. So what we've looked at is how we can fill in the cracks. Where does it usually fail? And what might we do as an organization or me as a person to make sure that those cracks are filled? And a huge piece is around that relationship management. The platforms that allow people to do pro bono, for example, there is no human connection. And I think it relies on a very small portion of our society to want to give themselves to something that they've never emotionally experienced.
So with you, when you meet somebody who, let's start on the opposite side, somebody who is high net worth, who is asked for everything, except maybe what they care about, which is the unfortunate part of many of our friends that have means, how do you start a conversation to either awaken their values or really get deep enough for them to really give you a sense of what's going to awaken those passions the most?
I think the biggest thing is asking them outright. And not what you care about, as in what is the buffet of nonprofit causes I can put in front of you, but really generally, what do you care about? And it might be something like The Simpsons. Okay, that's great. It might be something like branding. It doesn't necessarily have to always gravitate towards what you can do to solve the world's problems. And from there, you can, I think, unfold what it looks like for that person to be passionate, what it feels like for them to be excited, and it might be about The Simpsons, and then looking for that match across whatever it is that you're trying to create or bridge.
And how much does it take of you to share personally your passions, what you care about, and what you're dealing with, to get them to feel they're on the same page enough to divulge this when you ask it so overtly?
It is true that exposing your own vulnerability and conveying really why you care about something, but from a place of authenticity. So I think a typical nonprofit role is a little bit more about fundraising and having a dollar goal in front of you. I care about Victor because he's my friend, because I care about him. And other people care about him because of who he is. What he's trying to achieve comes later. And so that immediate work has to be done on connecting as humans, regardless of how different you are. And a big piece of what we try to do is draw out the commonalities before we talk about the differences, because we deal with such disparate groups demographically.
Absolutely. I mean, one of the things that I've started to understand is, my wife will make fun of me for saying this, but I'm 100% right on, which I don't say about everything, especially lately in my cooking, because I haven't as much time as home to cook as long as I need certain things to marinate. But what I started to understand is, when somebody expresses our value system who looks like us and sounds like us, we are often, that value is often diffuse, that value is often not actually as valuable as we need it to be. But when somebody talks about our authentic value who does not look like us, sound like us, or come from where we come from, we take it 100% of the time as more valuable. So what that means for me is, as somebody who is a white male Jew, year or two ago, I realized that two of my friends, who are both African-American entrepreneurs in tech who cared about helping black and brown kids code, needed to meet, and I was actually shocked they didn't know each other. So I wrote them, as normal for a lot of my introductions where I really use self-effacing humor in it, I said, shame on you guys, a white Jewish guy had to connect you. But they both read the email because they wanted to see what they should be ashamed of, especially for me, a medium-height, you know, curly-haired Jewish guy. But it was shocking to me that people from the same, quote, tribes, if they didn't know the value that they had to me, then they wouldn't then know the value that they should have to each other. And when you can talk about somebody who doesn't look like you, who isn't your same gender, isn't your same sexual persuasion, is not your same cultural value, the only thing you can talk about is the value they give to you, the values they represent, because everything else is derogatory. Everything else is superficial. And so you are somebody who, with representing this community, helps the entire world, not just a bunch of white people in New York. So you are somebody that I know champions other people's values. So when you talk to others that are like us as white people in this world, what are the values that you feel need to be come across in terms of the person's character, in terms of the person's, the strength of what they want to do and what they want to achieve and a vision beyond themselves? What are the things you like to champion the most, describing this one friend that you've mentioned so far with Proposing Peace or others?
Yeah, I think so often we tend to start with people's suffering and people's stories. So why should some of us who have been fortunate to win the birth lottery and not suffered in the way that others have, why should we care about someone? And I think very often we lead with the suffering, and we lead with their story, and there's, and it evokes a layer of sympathy.
But it also marginalizes somebody because the strength of a human being's character is not what they were given. It's what they do from it.
Absolutely. Nor is it, I feel, appropriate, right? If you had suffered something terrible and I introduced you at a birthday party, oh, this is my friend David, his mother just passed away. We would never start with someone's pain. And yet when we are looking at how we can help, we start with the pain point. So when I'm talking about someone like Victor, I talk about all of the things that he has achieved and his way of being in the world. He has the most extraordinary capacity for forgiveness of any person I've ever met. And that unraveling of that value really does show what he has lived through, which can't be, that is, you know, absolutely a part of who he is now. But starting with his triumphs and starting with exactly as you said, what are the core tenets of his personality? Why should we care? Why should we trust him? Why should we invest in him in whatever capacity, emotionally, financially, time-wise, whatever?
Amazing. So this reminds me, as we get to the final part of this interview, one of my favorite quotes, and it's a poet named Richard Eberhard. You ever heard of him?
I haven't.
So my mom showed me this quote years ago. I won't read the entire poem, but it basically goes like this. A man is driving on the road in autumn in New England, and he sees a squirrel about to cross the road. And he thinks about everything that the squirrel doesn't know about the world and its problems and its issues. And he personifies into this small creature this beauty of being oblivious to what he is unfortunately never able to be oblivious to. Then it ends with, just missed him. And I always think about that in terms of the idea that you can take everything so seriously until you find humor. And only when you find that humor does it actually contextualize what is otherwise too serious. And that humor is the same thing as sharing great food, understanding somebody else's humility, understanding what they're going through. Because those I know who have suffered the most in this world, not only, as you said, for this capacity for forgiveness, but they've found a way to make light of it. They've found a way to say, I have faced this adversity and I'm going to laugh at it, at least in some way, because it's the only way for me to heal from it. So when you think about a quote that you live by, I'd love for you to share one of them with us now.
Yeah, and yours is beautiful. I think there's a lot to be said about that. We'll have to pick up the conversation another time. Buckminster Fuller, I think, is a brilliant and amazing thinker, was. And he has a quote that we are called upon to be the architects of the future, not its victims. And at this moment, particularly as we as a species are facing collapse in a lot of ways and have had a lot of triumphs over our history, I think it's particularly important that we take ownership and not be passengers in the car of fate, that we just do not have the choice, nor do we have the time. And that doesn't mean everything has to be serious or a pursuit to reverse climate change. But we can't act as though the world is happening to us.
I think that's unfortunately so profound, because to feel like we are victims means to feel that we are helpless. And to feel like we are helpless makes us feel like we have no purpose. And when we have no purpose and we have no drive, that is when we are at our worst to others. And so for me, as somebody like you who values relationships, I believe wholeheartedly that the way we solve the problems in this world is putting the best people together that don't yet know each other. And you are somebody who does this at such a massive scale with different events throughout the Virgin brand. They're so lucky to have you. And I'm so lucky to catch you as a friend as part of this.
Oh, thank you. And likewise, you have taught me a lot.
Well, I appreciate you being on the podcast, Orchestrated Relationships, and I hope you enjoy the rest of your day.
Yeah, thanks. This was great.
On my next podcast, stay tuned for the undeniably charismatic Rachel Jarrell, CEO and co-founder of Nexus, whose global youth movement will redefine the world in years to come. We'll close this podcast with an excerpt from my work, Variations on a Box, Movement 1, for 4 amplified cellos. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to Orchestrated Relationships, recorded proudly at Smash Studios, edited by Stephen Bartlett. Stay tuned for our next episode.